Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Welcome back to another show of Shell and Tell with your boy Ryan at Terps B Expert, here to guide you through another exciting season of Terps football. It's been really hard to get behind the mics. Life's been hitting hard. Lots of things going on in the real world, but it doesn't matter now, right? The My Happy Place Section 7 is knocking on the door. Going to be here down there in CQ Stadium for all these games, giving the visiting team a hard time and cheering on these Terps. I'm excited for developments in the stadium. I'm just excited for developments on the field. I'm excited for developments in the national media. And that puts you in a really weird place as a Terps fan, because you haven't been used to being very excited for a decent amount of time. Sure, last 2 years have been fun. We've gone to bowl games. We've been exciting. But the expectations really weren't there outside of the program. There weren't the expectations outside of the diehards. But this year, there really have been, and it's a weird spot to be in. As usual, when it is a one-man show here, we have some video clips to help us guide you through this Terrapins conversation. Give me a chance to catch my breath, give you an input that's not just this guy's, and really try to make this a lot of fun. We have our audiovisual clips from Coach Loxley, Coach Gaddis, Antoine Littleton, among others. And that's kind of going to be a lot of the shows coming up. My free time is Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and that is not when the other guy's free time is. So as much as I can, I will be bringing you those video clips with some reactions, and really it being my Terps therapy session and to further enjoy what should be a really good season. Well, we're talking about the past, talking the last few years. Let's hear from Coach Loxley himself about the last few years.
You know, for the last 3-4 years, I've had a ton of players come to me and say, Coach, we want to talk about championships. And I said, man, until we can worry about taking care of the things we can control, we can't talk about championships. Well, the player-driven culture that we've been trying to instill, I think now has shown itself to me. It's shown itself by how they prepared going into the spring, when we had a lot of different moving parts with the portal, guys going in and guys coming out. I saw our team take the new guys in our program and kind of say, this is how we do things around here, and either you do it this way or you're not going to be around here. And to me, that's when you start seeing that type of leadership in the locker room. The football part will be easy. We got great coaching staff that will get these guys in the best possible positions to make plays. But what we need to see to compete for championships is the right kind of habits and behaviors. And those are the things that lead me to say what we said at the Big Ten Media Day.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of moving parts in the last few years. There's been a lot of personalities that have been removed from that locker room. There were some very good players that have left this team in the portal that I've been told were asked to leave. And that's a very strange place as a fan to believe that one of your better players on a mediocre squad at that time were asked to leave. But Coach Loxley truly seems to believe that the team is the sum of its parts, is greater as a whole than the sum of its parts. And when you have somebody detracting from the locker room like that, it's detrimental no matter how good they are. These guys apparently have bought in to the system. A lot of these guys were brought in by Loxley, and everyone that is there seems to want to be there. There were plenty of more of names left in the portal this year, and we will talk about them through this show, but there were also plenty more that had opportunities to go elsewhere in the portal, could have probably made more money, could have possibly had a little bit more playing time, or at least more relevant playing time. And they're here because they've bought in. They believe. They have that family atmosphere. And that's what it's looking you're looking for. Let's hear a little bit more about Locksley's statements at Big Ten Media Day about competing for the Big Ten.
The thing that led me to be able to declare that we're now ready to compete for Big Ten championships is just what I'm talking about, the players, and it'll be the point of emphasis. I like the way our locker room has come together. That player-driven culture that we've been pounding for the last 4 years, really, I think you're starting to see the fruits of the hard work, not just by our staff, but with the players themselves in terms of taking ownership of this team. They seem very driven, very focused, and getting and creating the right kind of habits and behaviors that allow you to play championship-level football.
So we talked about it. It's about the players. Not only does it matter about the buy-in during the coach practices, not only does it matter about the buy-in and the right behaviors during those team-led activities, but this is not a fair fight when you do not have more than that. The player-driven culture is about more than in practice time. It's the fact that these teams are limited in the amount of coach-led practices, the amount of supervision that the program can have. You can practice 24 hours a day, 7 days a week as a player, as long as the coaches aren't on the field. Also, outside of the practice, the extra reps these guys are putting in, the strength training that these guys are doing on their own, because the upperclassmen are policing this and they're letting you know, if you don't do this, there's no point in you being here. On top of that, all the behavioral issues that we've seen in the past, all the BB gun incidences, the in basketball, stealing of a Reese's cup, like these things that just shouldn't exist. And, you know, we've talked about how these exist in a lot of bigger programs. They bury them. Well, it's just not going to happen here. It's not going to happen. They're not going to bury it. So what can happen is the peer-to-peer accountability. They are there with each other outside of these practice times to hold accountable for both practice and life in general. Hopefully we see less of these incidents, the DUIs, the different things we've had, and they won't be speed bumps on your way to these raised goals, to these things that only exist because of the players. Like you said, we do have a higher quality average player now than when Coach Locksley got here. Have the recruiting classes been as good as they looked on paper? No, because a lot of the very top guys left. But also, they have hit at an unbelievable rate at these low three-star prospects, becoming everyday contributors, becoming honorable mention Big Ten players. The players on that level is where we are really making our money. Now, our upcoming recruiting class in 2024 is already looking very good. It could be the biggest recruiting class he's ever had. And if you win at the level that Mike Locksley's talking about, and you talk at the level and don't get embarrassed that Mike Locksley's talking about, then you can grow that even more, and we can exponentially grow, because it is about the players that win the games. The coach can only get us in the right direction. The players have to put us over the top. Now, the media worries, maybe we're putting a target on the kid's head. Maybe talking like this puts a little bit of extra emphasis on the Maryland game on people's schedule. Let's hear what Locks has to say about that.
As far as the spotlight, I mean, you know, we're not shying away from it, because the only expectation that really matters to us, and I mean this with all honesty, is the expectation we have in that building, the Jones Hill House. And I can tell you, there's nobody in there that's afraid of declaring that now is the time for Maryland to become a team that competes for Big Ten championships. It's part of our DNA in terms of, you know what, we're going to go fight for everything we get. We know that it won't be given to us. And we've got a bunch of guys in that locker room over there that really feel strongly about now is our time to do the things and create the habits and behaviors to be a championship level program.
I don't know what people are worried about. This is college football. Style points matter. There aren't very many teams out here that, if they can, aren't hanging 70 on you. It's how you get on SportsCenter. It's how you get noticed. It's how you get in the coaches' pool because they've noticed this crazy number you hung on somebody. Does anybody remember Penn State playing nice and not having a target on our back when we got stomped out? Does anybody remember Ohio State taking it easy on us because we're poor Maryland and we didn't talk trash for the game. It's not a real thing. It's not. Alabama beats Middle Tennessee State 104-6 every year because it's what they put on their schedule, and they don't care about feelings. They don't care about your opinion. They're out there to show off. It's a 3-year job interview, 4-year job interview for the NFL. The targets don't matter. If you believe it, say it. If you don't believe it, don't. I'm glad that we haven't been saying it for the last 3 years. I find it irrational and annoying that in the NFL, every year, every team says the goal is a division championship and a Super Bowl championship. Well, no, it's not. Look at your roster. There's only like 7 of you that can win this year. So what? The rest of you were just talking to talk. We didn't talk to talk. We talked about our floor. We talked about the expectation that a bowl is the floor, is the expectation for that. But we didn't talk about headhunting Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State or being in it for a Big Ten championship. We didn't. And maybe we shouldn't be talking now. I don't know. I don't know that yet. I haven't had a good enough look at this team. I don't think that you can actually get a good enough look at a team at our level when you're talking about split scrimmages, because it's you versus you, so maybe half of you suck. Maybe it's not the other half's awesome. I don't know. We're going to find out. Not going to find out now. We're not going to find out at Towson. We're probably not going to find out about Charlotte, though. Do not sleep on Charlotte, and please be out there because we got, you know, some good TV coverage coming to town, and we need some bodies in those seats, and Biff Pogi's going to take it seriously, so we need Terps Nation to take it seriously. But we do have some tests coming down the road. We'll have a pretty good idea after Virginia, I think. We'll have a really good idea after Michigan State, even though they're still probably on the bottom end of the Big Ten. But Michigan State is probably where others expected Maryland to be. Not the way that Mike Loxley's talking. The expectation that when you put Maryland down on paper without any research, where do you put them in the Big Ten? You put them above Rutgers, you put them below the top three, you know, or somewhere in the middle of these jumble of programs, depending on whether they're up or down. Loxley doesn't think so. Loxley thinks that we're going to be competing with those big three. That'd be great. We went out to the Big House last year and watched them compete head-to-head with Michigan. Won all but the first 7 seconds of the game. But he still didn't win the game because you gifted him a touchdown to start it. You got to start winning the games. Being close doesn't matter anymore. Horseshoes and hand grenades, that's all you got. Well, it's all in good what the coach thinks, but what do the players think? Let's hear from Antoine Littleton about this change in player culture.
The team camaraderie, I feel like this year we're more together than we ever been. Coach Locks, he's always talking about the togetherness as far as even the guys that don't usually talk to other certain guys on the team, like we all find ways to click and we all find ways to make sure that we're involved with each other and the most part that we're having fun with what we're doing when we come out here on the field. So I'm pretty confident with what we've got building this year.
The players buy in, or at least they're using the right mouthpiece. Maybe they're saying what they were told to say. Who knows? But if you follow it on social media, if you look at both the Terps page and the players page and things, I believe it. It looks like they're enjoying themselves at all times. It doesn't look like a job. There's plenty of places out there where it looks like a job. There's plenty of places out there where the respect for coach is artificial and it's forced and it's military-esque. But it's not here. It's not. You know, godfather of the DMV, Coach Loxley. He's earned the respect. He's been given the respect. And the people that are still in that locker room do respect him. They've brought in some extra talent. What's it going to look like with the new coaching staff? Sure, Loxley's still here, but we've lost a lot of pieces. We already talked about Biff Pogi going down to Charlotte. He wasn't ours, but he stole who we thought would be our future offensive coordinator. He stole our tight ends coach. We brought in some big guns too. So here is Coach Loxley discussing the influence of probably the biggest ad in the offensive coordinator that we had to change, Mr. Josh Gattis.
Yeah, you know, from an offensive standpoint, you know, it's not a new system. And do we have some new concepts that we run? For sure. You know, Josh's experience and some of the things he's been able to do since we last worked together, the success he had at Michigan, you know, especially running the football and some adjustments to things and how we've done it. But there hasn't been a big learning curve because there hasn't been a wholesale change of what we do. And philosophy hasn't changed. But I think what you're seeing is that the offensive side of the ball is starting to get accustomed and used to the personality that Josh will add to the system. You know, the big thing when you hire coordinators and with me being an offensive guy is it's a fine line of me allowing and making sure Josh is able to put his personality as a play caller into what we do and what we've done around here successfully. And I've seen that transition go really smoothly. Obviously, we haven't been in a game situation yet, but we got one coming up in a couple of weeks against Towson here where we'll get a better idea of where we are and how far we've come.
Obviously, it's from a couple of weeks ago already, since Towson is coming up this Saturday. I hope you already have your tickets. If not, this is one of the cheapest, easiest games to get to for the whole schedule. You got young kids want to come to half a game, you know, want to come to a tailgate and a quarter. Like, just get them out here. Try to start a new family tradition. As you know, I am not a Maryland grad. I started going to Maryland football games when I was 11 years old and haven't missed one since. And that is my connection to this team. I'm a nurse. The nursing school at University of Maryland is in Baltimore City. I didn't have any interest in going to Baltimore City. If it was at College Park, probably would have been working my butt off to get down there, but no interest in going to Baltimore City for my college years. So I am not a Terp, but I doubt there are many, you know, people as dedicated. I know there are out there. Believe me, I'm not trying to challenge you, but you don't have to be tied to this school. You can be tied to this state. I've talked to it before. I love the Terps. I find it that is the only school that truly represents the state of Maryland instead of the Baltimore City Orioles, the Baltimore City Ravens. Sure, my fans, great. But living through the PTSD of the Colts leaving out of Baltimore and the current Orioles, well, as good as they are doing, all the talk about John Angelos and moving the team and the terror, guess what? University of Maryland is not going anywhere. There's a 0.0% chance that University of Maryland ever shuts its doors. This team is forever. This is a family tradition of fun Saturdays. Easy to get to, easy to go to, like full day family event. Get down there on Saturday. Watch the Maryland Terrapins absolutely demolish the Towson Tigers and get your kids excited. You want to see some offense? There's going to be some offense here on one side of the ball, hopefully. But back to the point at hand, this is a new offensive coordinator. This offensive coordinator at Michigan did some big things with some big players, and he has really, his specialty was running the ball. He has been handed an absolutely locked and loaded running back room, both for this year and upcoming years. Really cannot believe some of the players that we did not lose in the portal this year and that we are still picking up freshman running backs, as top heavy as that room has become. It's exciting. We didn't know what we were going to get from this running back room last year. In fact, we kind of saw it backwards. We thought the wide receivers were totally loaded, but what could the young running backs do? McDonald was the only one that had really produced. Ended up being McDonald didn't even really get on the field. I mean, touched the ball here and there in his sophomore year. But for the most part, it was a Roman Hemby, Antoine Littleton show. Let's see what Littleton has to say about his new offensive coordinator.
We got a new offensive coordinator in, and Coach Josh Gattis, like, I really like what he's got going on with us. The offense is, you can just tell it's completely different now than it's ever been. And we're just ready to go on September 2nd.
Somewhere in the middle there, I guess. Coach Loxley says it's a Maryland offense with a personality. Antoine Littleton says that it's completely different than it's ever been. from what we've seen in the past, when the offensive coordinator changes, it's mostly Locksley's offense. I mean, why change it? I mean, the man won offensive coordinator of the year at Alabama after Alabama couldn't string an offense together ever, no matter how good they were. They won on defense and a few talents, you know. He ran an amazing offense for us last time he was here. He's been developing an offensive powerhouse ever since he got back. Like, there's no real reason to overhaul completely, and I just don't think Coach Locks would allow it, especially with the returning quarterback, especially with the amount of returning power we have on offense. So, I'm sure it'll be different. It's good to have some outside eyes. We have talked in the past about some of Mike Locksley's shortcomings, possibly being the clock management, possibly being the strange play calls in strange situations where maybe it's you're already in field goal range and you run a higher risk play that can either, you know, get you a first down or remove you from field goal range when you feel like there could be, you know, maybe hindsight, a better option on some of those things. So it is good to have a very experienced coach in this position. And let's hear from that coach right now.
Well, I don't know. It's not a Josh Gattis offense. This will be a Maryland offense. So we've got a great staff. I say that, you know, every place I've been, it's not about the person calling the play. It's about the people running. And your players allow you to create the identity of your offense. And this is a player-driven sport, you know. A good coach with bad players is a bad coach. A good coach always wants to be surrounded by good players. And we've got good players. And, you know, we will be as good as our players allow us to be. This comes down to the Jimmys and Joes. And so we've got to develop our players. We got to pour in. We got to invest in them. We got to develop them off the field just as much as we develop them on the field. And so the identity of this offense will be determined. But the system is the system. This system has been in place for years. This system is one that I'm very familiar with. Obviously, my time working under Coach Locksley as his assistant. And Coach Locksley has done a tremendous job building this system offensively to allow our players to have success.
He's seen it work. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. He saw it work at the highest levels at Alabama. He took it, pieces of it, and developed his own system out at Michigan. And now he's back with Locksley again. And I don't think there's going to be big changes. Sure, he's going to put some wrinkles in there. Great, that's awesome. He's going to have some fresh eyes. He's going to have learned some things since the last time that he worked with Locksley that he can bring back into this fold. But for the most part, as with every offensive coordinator we discuss, we have a barely highly decorated offensive coordinator as a head coach. He's not just going to be like, all right, my stuff doesn't work anymore. You go do your stuff. It's not going to happen. Now, there's some further complications to these offensive coordinator discussions. On top of bringing in Josh Gattis, they also brought in Kevin Sumlin, who has this co-offensive coordinator title. There's been some question about who's calling plays. Is it Sumlin? Is it Gattis? Is it Locksley? Where does the buck stop when the things go wrong? Well, when it goes wrong, it's Locksley. When it goes right, who's getting credit? That's a different question. So let's have Locksley address the different titles and what they're actually meaning in the system.
Yeah, and again, let's make sure, I want to make sure that everybody understands, you know, we've got a coordinator and a co-coordinator. The coordinator is the one making the calls. Josh is the primary play caller. Obviously, Kevin's background as an OC and a head coach, a lot of the stuff he does as a co-coordinator happens during the week with game planning and those things. But, Josh is the primary play caller, and it'll be that way this season. And if something changes, I'll let you guys know. But I think the big thing with both those guys is, you know, we have a system that we've had some success with here over the years, and they both have done some things at other places they've been. And it's very typical, for us to the things we have that they do as well, we keep in our terminology, our verbiage. But what they've both been able to add is their personalities. And, you know, Josh is a bright, smart coach. And, you know, he's not the young coach anymore, but a guy that has the game experience of calling it. And he's really kind of put his personality on it. And then with Kevin, I've seen the impact he's had with the young room of tight ends. You know, you've got Corey Dyches, and then you've got four young players that haven't really played a lot of football for us. And I've seen his experience as a coach being able to maybe get these guys up to speed or help them grow a little quicker than normal, which I think is a byproduct of the experience he has as a coach.
A lot to be said there. It's exciting to have that kind of experience in the room. The co-offensive coordinator being the week-to-week, in between games type input, that's good to have somebody else to break down the opponent's defense, what's worked for them in the past against these teams, what's worked for against similar defenses. I think it'll really free up Mike Locksley to be a part of other things. I'm sure he'll still be in his rooms. My man's a workaholic. He knows offense like the back of his hand. He will be a part of it, but I think he will have more trust in those two to be able to go take care of the other things that need to be taken care of on the team, because he's got a lot of things he's juggling. They talked about the tight ends at the end there, because that is also one of the three titles that they gave Kevin Sumlin on the way in here. The Terps, or the tight ends coach. Can you imagine what the expectations of this team would be if we don't lose possibly the biggest one into the transfer portal in CJ Dupree after Ohio State messes with him in the middle of the field and tries to tamper and get him to come to their side? Luckily, it came down to the final two of Ohio State and Alabama, and Alabama won out. My guess is the tampering accusations is probably true, and if he ended up at my guess is that the tampering charges were true, and if he ends up at Ohio State, it becomes a bigger question mark and a bigger story possibly down the road. But he ends up in Alabama. At least we don't have to play him. The sad news is this is an Alabama team, and Alabama is always for a championship run. That's their standard at this point. Our standard is bowl games. Their champion standard is college football playoffs. Hopefully someday, guys, cross your fingers. But Mr. CJ Dupree is currently listed the number one tight end of their depth chart. So he made a good decision for himself. He is going to get the run on a great team and hopefully have a great time. But, you know, that room's no slouches. Corey Dyches is athletic freak. Absolute matchup nightmare for a cornerback. We have a bunch of young tight ends behind him. It's really hard to say who your quote blocking tight end, your inline tight end, is going to be. I don't think it's going to be Dyches very often. He will probably be there on two tight end sets as a blocking tight end, or, you know, one tight end sets if you're in the middle of the field, but he will not be part of any heavy set. He's not a great blocker. I'm guessing it'll be just kind of an extra tight end type situation, an extra tackle type situation, tackle eligible type play. But there are some young guns that could surprise me. Those are the kind of things that we could find out here at this Towson game. You're not going to find out how good this team really is, but you are going to find out where these players are going to be, what these players are going to be doing. And of course, we won't be showing the whole bag of tricks, but a good idea of what this team's looking like on our side. Not how they're going to match up, because we are not in the same ballpark yet, but how our team looks on our side, the execution side of things. And that's basically what the goals are for this Saturday. Well, we talked about the extra tackle being on that line. Well, I don't know if we know who the other tackles are on that line. We've lost even more in the transfer portal and the NFL on that side of the ball. You had two drafted. You have one that made an NFL camp outside of your two drafted linemen. And then I don't care how much the Terps teams wanted to downplay the loss of Mason Lunsford, one of the first sad shoes to drop in the offseason. People wanted to play it down, but he gets picked up by LSU Tigers. That is just should be your guarantee that it's not an easy replacement. We got a couple big hits in the portal. These are players moving up a level, so it is hard to say how it will transfer. These are top players at a lower level, but where will they fit up here? Are they just going to be middle of the road at this level? Would they have, you know, I think that a lot of our backups, if they drop down and play at an FBS level, they're probably going to bulldoze some people. Or are these actually NFL caliber linemen, like we've been told, that just so happen to be at that level for whatever reason, whether it be grades or just playing at schools that don't get recruiting, you know, looks because they were the only NFL talent in their county. Who knows? We're going to find out. Again, that's not one of the things you can find out this week. There will probably be 3, 4, 5 different offensive lines playing Saturday against Towson. But you will get a look at these guys. You will get to make your own judgments. On top of the loss of Mason Lunsford in the transfer portal, we had the loss of what could have been with Colton Deary. You know, here on the program, both myself and Fred, very high on the prospects of Colton Deary, his aspects of coming in here and both wrestling at a Big Ten level and playing center at a Big Ten level and what that could mean for the future of this offensive line. And it just didn't materialize. My man looked different. He just looked different than the freshman that we get. And it just gave us so much hope. But the talk was this spring that he was getting outplayed by the two centers that were already there. And then we added another one that could play center. So it doesn't, I don't think that one's as big of a loss, except for in our head. Like, the future that we projected for Colton Deary and the future he could still have. I mean, it's a development process and also line. You know, that's the loss. But what Colton Deary actually was at this moment and what he could have produced for us this fall, I don't think that that one's going to hurt us quite as much. But let's talk to the guy that actually knows, the one that's been here in and watching the offensive line. Let's hear what Coach Locks has to say about his remaining players here with the Terps.
We were really fortunate that even though we've got some young pieces or new pieces, not necessarily young, because, you know, you've got two guys that are basically transfers that have earned degrees from other places, and Gotti and Corey Bullock. Well, and I would say luckily we've had those guys as well as Marcus Dumerville here for the spring. And a lot of the kinks and the things that sometimes don't get executed, we've kind of worked through with this group. So right now, and I think the biggest challenge we have is putting the best five on the field. And because of the versatility of these guys, you know, Gotti can play tackle, he can play guard, he can play either tackle. You know, guys like Emilio Moran has the ability to play guard and tackle. You know, DJ Glaze can play both left side and right side. And so what we're trying to do is figure out the best five to get on the field. And, you know, today was the really first live bullets that we got a chance to see with guys like Mike Purcell, who we brought in the summer, getting some valuable reps. And to me, that's what we've got to kind of figure out. We know we have enough talent there and the skill we're looking for, but now figuring out who the best five are that gives us the best chance to compete and win versus Towson.
Yeah, this was not a problem we had last fall. We knew who our five were. We were messing around with some depth. We were messing around with maybe position changes. We had like a right guard question. But pretty much the offensive line was locked down. There is not a position on this offensive line that's really locked down right now. We know a certain number of players that are going to be playing. You don't necessarily know where that's going to be. As he said, the positional versatility is great here. You know, the old saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. That's not true on the offensive line. Like, if you have these guys that can play and move around and things, it's immensely helpful as you get later into the season. And even though your top five was, you know, lined up, somebody's getting hurt. You don't get through a football season with the same five offensive linemen there. So having the ability to shift around and move and get, you know, positions for different players, that way you're not at your third string offensive, you know, guard. What you are is you're at your backup tackle and your starting tackle's playing guard. It's a different caliber of player, because we are not a team that you can look at the three deep at every position and be okay with them playing. So you got to be looking at where these one and twos at the different positions can play ahead of those twos and threes at that current position. So again, the depth charts are fun. The depth charts are nice. Depth charts don't mean anything. They're put out because Locks is required to put them out. He's said so in the past that he doesn't want to, isn't going to put out a depth chart, but it all drives attention. It all drives media engagement. And I think you're going to keep seeing depth charts. They're just not going to mean anything. So enjoy them. They're a talking point. It gets you going, gets you hyped up, but don't believe them. Certainly don't believe him. Well, it's nice to hear what Locksley has to say with the offensive line. But how about the guy that's going to be very dependent on the offensive line? Let's hear what Antoine Littleton has to say about the big guys up front.
The O-line, they've been clicking since day one. Those guys, they've been working every day. And the main thing with the O-line, from the running back standpoint, we just try to make sure that we keep those guys confident and let those guys know like they're doing a hell of a job every time. We're busting at 90-yard or 80-yard or whatever the case may be, as long as we're doing our job, they know they're doing theirs.
Yeah. So the beginning of the statement's great. Offense is clicking. Everything's going great. These guys really know what they're doing. And then the end of the statement kind of qualifies. Our job is to keep the offensive linemen's confident up. Let them know they're doing a great job. So, in other words, we're never getting an honest answer. If they're terrible, we won't know. So, I think they're going to be pretty good. I think they're going to possibly look great against Towson, against Charlotte, even against Virginia. As we saw, the transition from the ACC to the Big Ten was a wallop on the offensive and defensive lines. It is a completely different ball game. I don't think it's going to be a problem there either. You're not going to know anything about this offensive line unless they are horrifically bad until Michigan State. That will be the first time that we get a true look and can actually break down about how this is going to hold up through a Big Ten season, excluding the injury bug, excluding the fact that, you know, this may not be your offensive line. So it's a long time. Of course, they're looking for it every day. Of course, they're looking for every edge. Of course, they're trying to make the decision now. But as far as the fans and even really the coaches, you won't know what these guys are made of until you have them against somebody else, against somebody they don't know who's just as big and bad as them. And that's not going to happen until we go up to East Lansing, Michigan, and play Michigan State. That's the first time. Well, even though the live reps are what these guys really need, they are having split squad scrimmages. They are having some live action, quote unquote, trying to get these guys ready. So let's hear what Locksley had to say about one of their last scrimmages.
I thought a week ago, you know, we weren't very sharp with our special teams substitutions and our execution of the special teams fundamentals. This week, I saw a major improvement. Guys being into the scrimmage, understanding substitutions. When somebody's down, guys were ready to go. We were able to get most of the special teams work, all those special situations, tight punt, you know, pooch punt. We're able to get a lot of good work, you know, on the special teams. And I thought offensively this week, you know, I saw them make a few more plays. I thought we moved the ball more efficiently on the offensive side than last week. And then defensively, I also saw our defense, you know, they came away with some takeaways here today, which is something we've tried to emphasize from the last scrimmage to this one.
Yeah, it's not surprising that special teams is behind the other two aspects of football here. The turnover has been immense. Chad Ryland, now off the NFL, got some good news this morning. Looks like he has won the kicking job for the New England Patriots. So another terp in the NFL there. Someone to root for whenever they're, you know, not affecting the Ravens standings. Good to see him winning that battle there, because it's still up in the air with the only kicker that got drafted before him, Michigan's kicker out there in San Diego. So interesting to see that he's done his job, that he believed and spoke like he was going to be an NFL standout, and this is step one. It's difficult. There are not 32 jobs even available for a kicker every offseason. Many of them are already locked up for the next 8 to 10 years with kickers that aren't going to leave. So it is really impressive that he has made his life dream come true. Can't say fell Maryland without Ryland. So we do appreciate everything he gave the program last year and wish him well. The other departure that we can't not go without talking about, Mr. Anthony Pecorella. Anthony Pecorella, good friend of the show, has been on multiple times and has spoken to us countless times about the Terps. He did leave to play elsewhere originally and is now taking a medical redshirt, or has retired from football. I'm not sure which way he has put it, but he is facing some serious medical issues and is fighting leukemia right now. Our thoughts and prayers are with Mr. Anthony Pecorelli. Couldn't be a better kid. He's always been very respectful, very fun to talk to, and just an overall great guy. So I wish him the best. Colton Spangler is the punter that was there with Anthony Pecorelli all the way through development, and he has stuck around. So clearly it's not a new position, but it is different. You will have him, you know, with the corner kicks that were kind of Anthony's specialty. You will have, you know, developments in the long snapper. It's just not surprising. And then always with special teams, you were trying to work in the younger guys, the less experienced guys, the trying at all costs, for at least the fans, to eliminate a Dante Dimas type situation. Less exposure to injuries with some of your good but young and less important elsewhere players. Let's hear what Loxley has to say about those positions, the return game in the special teams.
Yeah, I mean, we've inherited some skilled players, guys like Tyrese Chambers, who's not young but new. I think he'll be able to aid us in the punt return game. You know, obviously back in the kicking game, guys like Octavian Smith and even Roman Hemby. You know, I think some of the young receivers, Ryan Manning and Wislowski, all those guys have been able to start putting themselves in position. But we've got some veteran guys back there in Tarheeb as well as in Jay Sean that have shown the ability to return punts and kicks, and, you know, we'll continue to develop those other guys.
Yeah, it would be nice to have some other guys. I didn't like the first name. I don't like hearing Chambers' name back there. That feels like a very Dante Dimas move. I expect very big things from Chambers. Hopefully we'll be getting another episode out this week before the game, and you guys can break down the wide receiver room a little more, the DBs a little bit more, kind of some of the expectations about the upcoming schedule after Towson. Newsflash, I think we're winning this weekend. Don't really need to break that down much further. But it is interesting. We have to give some action to these younger guys that aren't your top three, four, even five wide receivers, because we do a great job of rotating in fresh bodies that wide receiver spot. Do a great job of spreading that ball out to maybe a detriment, we'll have to see, to the draft stock of our Terps last year was a little surprising. I mean, it does turn out that that Rack was going to be drafted in the seventh round by the Philadelphia Eagles and requested them not to. That came out in a recent press conference because he was already offered fifth or sixth round money from Tampa, and also saw that the depth chart ahead of him was vulnerable, that Rack could show up in Tampa and make noise. And him, like Chad Ryland, got great news this morning, and he has made the 53-man roster for Tampa Bay. Good to see for him. He had made some big catches. Really cool watching the Ravens-Tampa Bay preseason game. The two leading receivers was Dante Dimas for the Ravens and Rakim Jarrett for Tampa. Unfortunately, only one of them got good news. Still hopeful that Dante Dimas will at least be on the practice squad for the Ravens, but that news has yet to break. We will keep you updated with that. I'm sure you may know before we tell you, but it's been a lot of fun watching them grow. I think that we got big things in store. I think that the transfers on both those sides are really going to be big. Lot of talent to replace on the defensive end of the ball, but I think they're there. I think we're ready. I think the depth and the safeties will cover for it, but we'll get into that more on this next episode. I thank you guys for tuning in. I thank you guys for giving me this therapy to talk through Terps football and kind of keep the excitement rolling, turn a all-day Saturday fun event into an all-week event. As you guys know, Maryland football is my baby, so I will continue to put out this Terps content throughout the football season, and we will see how we can go after that. I think that even though I love Terps basketball, that amount of coverage did put a stress on the availability for my other aspects of life. So we'll see how that goes. But football is king in the Shamwell household. We will be down in lot 4B tailgating every game. If you guys want to stop by and say hi, it won't be hard to find us. Come down there and get some Shot 30. If you know, you know. Until next time, guys, here's the wishing. All is well under the show.